Our troubles would have been over by now, the earth would have been restored to its pristine beauty, the classroom would have been filled with souls engaged in advanced evolutionary studies, the axis would have been straightened long since, and the globe under its rightful cosmic name, Freedom's Star, would be entering into its new orbit without travail. We must remember that the cosmic hour that would have 51 launched all this evolutionary progress occurred not on Good Friday 2,000 years ago. That was a public demonstration of the power of the suspended breath wherein a person may appear to die but continues to live, no matter how battered and bruised his physical body may be. That was public proof that pain and death have no power over the higher vibrations emanating from the source. Jesus had already proved this privately in many instances. He had healed many lepers, many sick persons. He had raised Lazarus from the dead, and also the young daughter of the ruler. In the case of the woman who was healed by touching the hem of his garment, the demonstration was somewhat public, but most of the people in the procession were followers and admirers of Jesus. The event on Good Friday was definitely planned to prove that a human being could so purify the four lower bodies and allow the atoms to function at their maximum efficiency that even crucifixion could not cause death. Jesus did not attempt to do this alone when he was on the cross and surrounded by jeering enemies. It was necessary that Mary stand at the foot of the cross and hold inviolate the Immaculate Concept. Before Mary came into embodiment to give birth to Jesus, she had rehearsed all this before a small council headed up by Lord Maitreya, then occupying the office of the Christ, and a group of adepts chosen from his administrative staff. Mary stood steady in the light for 3 hours while these adepts tried in every way possible to intrude upon her line of thought, to break her pattern of thinking and feeling, to distract her with all sorts of other ideas, even good ones. But Mary stood and held the Immaculate Concept of life eternal within her consciousness. Mary passed the test in poisoned dignity and sweetness, but well she knew that in a flesh body, in the physical appearance world, it would be quite a different matter. Standing there on Calvary amid dark clouds of poisonous emanations carrying astral impurity, bigotry, selfishness, greed and lust from the consciousnesses of those around her, Mary had to hold with every fiber and cell of her being to that immaculate concept of the resurrected, risen, breathing Christ. But she held to the immaculate concept without losing her poise for even a fraction of a second. She was not alone or without friends gathered from the entire galaxy and galaxies beyond. There, together, on that windy hilltop, the forces of light achieved such a mighty victory over darkness that the entire cosmos resounded with glory of the risen one. For the result depended entirely upon whether or not Mary could hold and steadily visualize without wavering, the risen Christ. Yet she was confronted by her son on the cross for 3 mortal hours. He was to remain in the tomb for 3 days, and during that entire time she still had to keep fixed and anchored in her consciousness the fact that her son, in his resuscitated flesh body, would come to her in the old grist mill near Bethany when he had risen. Standing there at the foot of the cross, Mary carried within the folds of her garment 3 small packages, one contained gold, another a stick of frankincense, and another of myrrh. She had kept these 3 packages since that day in the stable at Bethlehem when the 3 wise men of the East had come to see the baby Jesus. These were the especially prepared minerals and spices that were to be used in the anointing of the body of Jesus, so that he could be assisted in the ascension process. As she left the scene on Calvary, accompanied by John, she gave the packages to the women who were to anoint the body. Incidentally, the 3 wise men are today serving the light as masters of the wisdom, El Moria, Kuthumi, and Diwil Kal. Jesus had been born without karma. In his previous embodiment as Apollonius of Tyana, he had transmuted the little karma he had remaining at that time. Nevertheless, he had to come back into embodiment as a baby in order to demonstrate that he could be as other men and still achieve the ascension. He grew up like other little boys, subject to the same childish happenstances. Again, it was Mary who had to hold the Immaculate Concept for her little son until the full realization of his mission could dawn upon him. So when he would stumble while playing and running and skin his knees, Mary would call him to her and say, "Son, let us not magnify this imperfection. Let us magnify the Lord." In this way Mary kept from Jesus any stain of fear or vibrations of pain that might mar his perfect atomic purity. This aspect of the upbringing of the child Jesus and of his crucifixion was not grasped by the multitudes, however. They could not realize that they could refuse to accept pain and imperfection, and that of their own free will they could make a correct choice and magnify the Lord instead. After the crucifixion, not a moment's time was lost by the dark forces who moved swiftly to take advantage of what they sensed might make a good business proposition. Thus was church unity established, and thus it continues down to the present day. Church unity has dragged humanity on its weary, pain-racked way for 2,000 long years, emphasizing the suffering of poor Jesus and poor Mary and those poor disciples. Just a bunch of ignorant fishermen, you know. Too bad, too bad. After that poor man Jesus tried so hard, that he did not have a few really intelligent followers. So they say. And so they have continued to say down, through the centuries. Well, today we can all be grateful to the Father in heaven that when the disciples retired to the old grist mill at Bethany after the event on Calvary, they were so simple and direct in their ways that they just spent their time writing about what they had learned from the teachings of Jesus. Had they been intelligent scientists, they might have started tinkering around with H-bombs. They might have thought of taking up the sword and destroying their enemies, instead of taking up the pen and writing about how it is not only possible but necessary to love one's enemies. It is necessary, that is, for anyone who expects to continue his evolution on this planet or in higher spheres. It is necessary for anyone who would like to transmute his own karmic burden and stop filling the atmosphere with emanations of hatred. All of this could have been accomplished during the past 2,000 years had the people taken the trouble to discriminate between Christianity and churchianity, and had those same people had the courage to hold to the immaculate concept of oneness with the Source, thereby gaining sufficient divine power and angelic assistance to cast out churchianity and the dark forces. Lock, stock, and barrel. But this was not done. Churchianity gains steadily in power and in greed and in its hold over human minds. It even pretended to the people that it also had a hold over their souls, and many of the foolish ones believed this drivel. A soul, any soul, even the soul of a sparrow, has a direct line of communication with its Source. A sparrow does not need to go to church on Sunday morning, yet the Father knows when it falls. Moreover, the fallen sparrow does not require an expensive funeral, and this fact alone has served to keep the sparrows free from an economic system based on the doomsday theme of death and taxes. Page 55. During the last 2,000 years the dark forces have struck again and again at the heart of the people. Jesus said, "Let not your heart be troubled." But the dark forces, especially those who work through churchianity, always utilize such advice as this, twist it around and then proceed to launch a campaign designed to accomplish just the opposite. In this case they set out to trouble the hearts of the people. Since the heart contains the sacred flame, it must be constructed of special substance with an especially sensitive attunement that will record subtle vibrations. Strictly speaking, the heart is made of universal substance and is considered a universal organ. It is not owned and operated by the individual as is, for example, the liver or kidneys. Therefore, it is absolutely essential to evolutionary progress that the heart be not troubled by outer things. This fact the dark forces know, and they have taken every advantage of it. As we look about us in the world today, it is plain to be seen that virtually everything is so set up as to trouble the heart. This means that as the pure electrons leave the heart and enter the bloodstream, they are at once misqualified, and carry the individual through the day in one long, weary, hectic stride. It can be seen from the foregoing that the forces of light must proceed to transmute all of the old order, and it must be accomplished during the Aquarian Age while the seventh ray is in full power. The Christ forces, aided by the space people, will not do a patching job. There is no intention of using the old machinery of civilization. All will be swept aside. It will be a world of unlimited abundance for all, and the welfare of all life on the globe has been provided for, down to the last dog and cat. All of these problems are solved and handled on the inner planes by adepts, and then, will be lowered into manifestation onto the physical plane. A sufficient number of space people and earth people who are disciples of the hierarchy will be on hand on the physical plane to see that the original pattern according to the divine plan is not distorted. Since the masses did virtually nothing to help themselves during the Piscean Age, and only got themselves into more trouble by supporting the forces of darkness back of the H-bomb development, we are now crowded for time. The New Age manifestations are ready, the space people are ready, the disciples are ready, but the masses are still busy with their endless rounds of eating, drinking, sleeping and procreating, interspersed by their efforts to make enough money to keep the other four projects going. The axis of the Earth is straightened. A fact which will take further karmic burdens off the Earth itself and place them squarely on the backs of the individuals who create them. The planet is entering its new orbit, and the rapid vibrations, striking on the four lower bodies of an individual, will increase his tempo of living enormously. If the individual is making no effort to transmute his karma, and to keep the atomic structure of his lower bodies clean and free from astral debris, then he will not be able to cope with the situation of daily living in the new age. A bass drum is not built to handle the vibrations of a violin. The increased tempo will bring out whatever is within each individual state of consciousness. If the vibratory note is one of poise and peace, that note will sound and resound with expanding strength and beauty. If the vibratory note is one of violence and anger, the individual, harried by the pressure of the new tempo and unable to meet the challenge, will express his state of consciousness as best he can. He may seize a gun, and start shooting, or a knife and start slashing. He may jump in his car and drive fast and furiously over the highways, bring death and destruction in his wake. He may seek out a peddler of dope. But mostly the average citizen will do none of these things. Mostly he will just sit and sit and sit and watch television, or given a chance he will talk and talk and talk. He may appear to be talking about the state of the world, economically and politically. Actually, he is vocally expressing the confused state of his own consciousness. He is talking about himself and his own troubled heart, even though he speaks about the troubles in the Near East or Russia or the Pentagon. He is sounding his vibratory note, and his vibratory note is always the same doleful moan, the note of crucifixion. That is why humanity missed the Ascension story 2000 years ago. That is why the Ascension story must now be pushed forward into human consciousness in only a few short years. That is why many will break beneath the forced process of evolutionary growth and will have to be removed to another hospital planet for further long ages of preparation to face the light, the truth. There are many, many bigots and skeptics who will have just as little chance to go into new age evolution as has the camel to go through the eye of a needle. During the millions of years that have passed since the laggards came, men have learned to love the darkness because their atomic structures were filled with shadowed astral substance, the product of their own miscreations. This produced a state of negativity which led not to creativeness, but to a sense of falseness, of artificiality, of melodrama. Finally, the whole world turned into a stage, with all the players disguised by phony masks, indicating they had lost their true identity, they had lost all knowledge of their source and knew not the face of the Father. Crucifixion became humanity's keynote, ascension was regarded as a fable. Crucifixion has now come to be considered not only normal but noble on this planet. It has come to be confused with the purification process. Actually, the purification process is always joyous and wholesome. No purification can take place while the individual feels that he is being crucified, that he is suffering for some good cause, or while he is busy feeling sorry for himself and wallowing, simply wallowing, in his own self-pity. These feelings do not purify the atoms. On the contrary, they are astral emotions of the most degrading type and will further clog the atoms with astral debris. It is correct to say that before we can raise the vibrations of our atoms to the ascension frequency, we must let go, let go, let go, of all our pet peeves. But if this process proves to be a mental and emotional ordeal, then we are right in the midst of our own crucifixion. And when we let go, we are not to become like a dish rag in the kitchen or a vegetable in the garden. The letting go must be accomplished through transmutation, not through shrugging off responsibility. We are personally responsible for all energy which we have misqualified and which is held imprisoned in darkness. We must release that energy by transmuting the darkness into light. We have learned to love the shadowed situation, the melodramatic touch that will cause the tears to flow. We have learned to love sorrow so much that churchianity has even taught little children and strong men to weep over the sorrowful plight of Jesus and Mary. Yet had even a shadow of sorrow ever touched the atomic structure of either Jesus or Mary, the crown of cosmic victory would not have been achieved by them. It was achieved. Both made the ascension. Their electronic vibrations were never slowed down for a fraction of a second during their last embodiment. They lived in a state of constant joy. They did not die. They ascended within self-generated force fields of cosmic power. The only way to redeem a single clogged atom is to visualize the violet fire sweeping through it like a blowtorch, transmuting and releasing all misqualified energy within the atom and allowing it to be sent back to the sun for rejuvenation. The only way to redeem an individual whose four lower bodies are made up of clogged atoms is precisely the same. Yet so vast is public ignorance on the subject of human suffering that society is set up to increase crucifying experiences rather than to eliminate them entirely. Tens of thousands of persons are kept in prisons and mental hospitals when a simple explanation of normal evolutionary processes would enable them to transmute the energy they have misqualified, automatically releasing their needless tensions. On the plane where souls are received after disembodiment, they are cared for by the angelic hosts, and now every individual is required to remain for certain periods in temples of the violet fire. Their length of stay depends upon the amount of misqualified energy which must be transmuted. But on the physical plane, proper teaching in transmutation is desperately needed to curb increasing crime, juvenile delinquency, dope addiction, the whole array of nervous, emotional and mental illnesses and, most important of all, the delusion of death. The hierarchy and space people are waiting in readiness to send us as many teachers as needed to handle this situation, but the military powers in every so-called civilized country, backed by a degenerate churchianity, have for several years refused to reveal to the public the truth about flying saucers. The highest government and church officials on the globe have been well informed about every angle of the flying saucer story for many years. But Big Brass sits back smugly and issues orders to jet fighter planes to fire on spaceships. Meanwhile, tranquilizer pills may be obtained at the corner drugstore. This situation, now worldwide, constitutes the crucifixion ordeal for humanity at this time. Fashions in crucifixion methods change. In the day of Jesus, it was an officially approved physical act, somewhat in the category of arena sports. In our time, the physical aspect is handled by judges, juries and Ku Klux Klanners. Mental and emotional crucifixions, such as most of us are undergoing now, are usually handled by the neighbors. This is especially noticeable today in gossipy, insular communities where the natives have not yet felt the impact of the Aquarian Age. They are the modern laggards, following exactly in the footsteps of the first refugees from evolution. They are filled with the same identical resentments, the same hatreds, the same stupid rebellions against their creator. They are as lazy as their predecessors, too. For they are the ones who are always whining and yak-yaking about why doesn't God stop war? Well, he doesn't stop it because he didn't start it. God never interferes with the free will of his children, and if war is their idea of fun or intelligence or beauty, then war they must have and will have until they have had their fill of blood and gore. Lately though, since the space people have appeared on the Earth scene, the blame tossed out so freely by the whiners has shifted somewhat from God to interplanetary visitors. Why don't they stop war? The answer is the same. They cannot and will not interfere with our free will, our right to choose the path to destruction or the path to enlightenment, as individuals. However, at this time a balance has been struck, and the free will of the population as a whole can be considered. For now, those on the side of the forces of light will soon far outnumber those who are supporting the forces of darkness. Thus it is the weight of worldwide public opinion that is now being balanced in the scales held by Portia, the goddess of justice. The lone individual still has freedom of choice. If he insists upon serving darkness rather than light, he may do so and live out his present embodiment has transmuted his karmic burden sufficiently so that he will be able to see that serving the light, in fellowship with his earth brothers, is the wisest and most joyous course to pursue. The space people are here today not to stop war, although war must be stopped, but to assist all those who wish to serve the light in full freedom, unhampered by a stupid economic system, by conniving political groups, or by competitive church unity. God, being indivisible, cannot be divided up into little pieces and auctioned off to those with the most money in the collection box. It was known throughout the galaxy that by the year of 1957, with the Violet Ray in full power, thousands upon thousands of Earth people would be ready for the light. It was known that these informed vocal millions would speak the word of power, with their invocative demand for peace resounding through the cosmos. The entire galaxy, and galaxies beyond, have stood ready and waiting for this cosmic moment, ready to speed assistance to those who had placed their trust in God. Part 4. Preparations for this cosmic moment on Earth have been so stupendous and far-flung that they are quite beyond the grasp of the finite mind of an Earthman, burdened as it is with astral debris. But we can select certain points of light in the human constellation. We can study these points of light, focus our full attention upon them. In this meditative way, illumination will come to us, joy will surge within us, gratitude and love will ray forth from us. Then swiftly, silently, the healing wings of peace will settle over us. In that instant we will know that the dove has returned. Before the laggards came to Earth, every individual rayed forth light like the true sun and sun that he was. Light was his natural heritage which he carried with him when he stepped forth as a spark, a white fire being, from Alpha and Omega. He had never known darkness, he had never known distress or limitation or pain. But as millions of years dragged by on leaden feet after the laggards came, only rarely did an individual on planet Earth radiate forth light from his aura. There have always been a few disciples in the outer world who have caught and held the vision of light, protected and sustained by the hierarchs of the rays who constitute the Christ forces within the spiritual hierarchy. Very, very few of these hierarchs have been Earthmen. They were all brought in from other planets until quite recently. During the past few hundred years, a few Earth men and women have graduated and have been appointed to post as masters of the ageless wisdom and twins of the rays. Many of these are well known to us historically, but when we examine the records, we find that the total number shrinks considerably because the same person had many embodiments. In a world which vibrated to pain and fear, a disciple whose task it was to externalize the perfection of the Father had a rough time holding his peace and poise and harmony. His state of consciousness had to be held steady in the light without the slightest wavering. He had to reject appearances as untrustworthy. He not only had to raise the vibration of his own atoms to a frequency that would ward off disease and disharmony of all kinds, but they had to dispel the delusion of death. He had to learn these things during many embodiments, and yet live what seemed to be a normal life so far as the neighbors were concerned. That is why the total number of initiates is small, because we find the same individual back in embodiment again and again. For an example, El Moria, present Chuan of the First Ray, was in embodiment as Sir Thomas More, Chancellor of the Exchequer under Henry VIII of England. Later we find him back in embodiment as the Irish poet, Thomas More. These were only two of his many incarnations, and still later in history he graduated into the ranks of the initiates, the illumined ones who serve the Christ forces, Kuthumi, Chuan of the Second Ray until July 1958, was known to us long ago as Pythagoras. Yet in recent times he was an embodiment as Saint Francis of Assisi. So as we look down the great corridors of history, we see many points of light on which we might focus, but the story of Saint Francis, for instance, would not be the complete story. It would give us but one small clue to the spiritual giant, Cuthimi as he is today. We like to think that we know and understand so much, so very much, about Jesus and Mary and Joseph. Yet there are few persons today who have even a smattering of correct information about those three initiates. There are few persons who realize that back in the days of Atlantis, when Sanat-Kumara was lord of the world, the man Joseph was a high priest of the violet fire in the amethyst temple of Archangel Zadkiel, then located on the physical plane on a high hill in what is now Cuba. There are few who realize that in another embodiment as Columbus, this same high priest, this same man Joseph, sailed across the waters that submerged Atlantis and landed directly on the island of Cuba, where he had formerly served in Zadkiel's temple. Why, we might ask, is such an intricately woven pattern of history necessary to sustain the human race on planet Earth? The answer is that the human race has been sustained here through 19 million years of darkness, of human response to pain, distress, ignorance of the basest sort. In order for Sanat-Kumara to carry out his original concept of saving the planet from dissolution, he had to carefully choose and select a few souls who had not lost all memory of their source. These souls were very rare among Earth people, therefore, it was necessary time and again to bring in volunteers from other planets. In this galaxy, the Earth is regarded as a beachhead which can be held only by the strongest of commando forces. Yet force in the common military meaning of the word cannot be used. The force must be entirely electronic in nature. It must consist basically of scientifically directed currents of energy or light, penetrating deeper and even deeper into the darkness of men's minds. The task of bringing light to Earth is not an easy one, and when volunteers are requested from other planets to assist in the work, they do not snatch up their assignments thoughtlessly. The cosmic hierarchy works on what we could call a time plan, which schedules certain events thousands of years ahead. Actually, time and space as we understand it on this Earth is based entirely on illusion, but in order to fit our darkened minds into the cosmic scheme of things, the hierarchy makes an effort to bring to our attention certain time relationships which we can grasp. Time as it affects us in relation to the galaxy might best be understood if we use the seasonal approach. Spring comes to our land and we are aware that certain changes take place in temperature and in vegetation. In the galaxy, similar changes occur as the seven rays swing in and out of manifestation in major and minor cycles. Here on the Earth, we are energized by a certain ray which is extremely powerful for a period of approximately 2000 years. Certain achievements can take place under certain ray conditions, and cosmic plans are made accordingly. 66, when the man Joseph was selected as the spouse of Mary, the cosmic appointment was based not so much on events in his past, as on events in his future. The appointment had to fall to a man who was adept in the use of the violet fire. Away back in Atlantean times, when Joseph had been one of Zadkiel's high priests, he had tended the sacred flame on the great central altar in the amethyst temple. The temple was actually built entirely of amethyst stones held together by a mortar of pure gold, for the amethyst as found in nature is but crystallized violet fire of the seventh ray. During the 2,000-year period of the Piscean Age which followed the birth of Jesus, it was the ruby fire of the sixth ray that energized this planet. So Joseph played a somewhat minor role in the Holy Family because his cosmic moment had not yet arrived. Coming back into embodiment again and again, he spent the 2,000 years preparing for the greatest role that has ever been played out upon the world stage. As Joseph, as Roger Bacon, as Francis Bacon, as Count Recochza, and as many other historical figures, the present lord of civilization, the adept who is now guiding our planet into the new golden age of Aquarius, has emerged as Sanctus Germanus. The Holy Brother, known to millions today as Ascended Master Saint Germain. At the present point in history, and from now on for the next 2,000 years, the very fate of every atom on, in and around the planet Earth, will be influenced by the cosmic fact that Saint Germain is now the lord of civilization on this globe. It was under his jurisdiction that the axis of the planet was straightened by the angelic kingdom. It is under his jurisdiction that the planet is edging, with a sidewise motion, into its new orbit. It is under his jurisdiction that the planet is spiraling upward into a new special region. It is under his jurisdiction that all imprisoned energy on, in and around the Earth is now being released and returned to the Sun for rejuvenation.